What up? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. I'm doing just fine.
Okay, you really convinced me.
I'm glad that you're convinced. I've got that song stuck in my head, and I don't know the words. I'm sorry for butchering it, but the one that's like, Paralalalabamba, that one.
Oh, like, what is it, La Bamba?
I know it's not Paralalalalabamba. I know that's not correct, but that's what I got for you today.
Good. I'm glad that that's on loop in your head going the whole time I'm going to be talking to you today.
And over.
Yeah.
And over.
It's okay. I have that now, as I have for the past well over a month. I have that with pants feet. And so much I wish I could just awake to a new day and not have, I like my feet around your feet. And I would just, what I would give. But, I mean, I live in this hell. What can I say?
Pants, feet, feet, pants. Yes, great. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, listen, we had a fun-ass little time recently, didn't we?
We really did.
It really kicked off the really Halloween did. Season.
But it was also a terrible time.
Are we going to talk about it?
I think just like for a little bit. Just
a small bit.
Because I'm a little bit shocked still at just what happened to me. And I just think it warrants discussion.
I thought we were going to lose you.
I thought I was going to die. Yeah. And I can't tell you how irritated I would be as a shade in the ether that I was killed by Virgin River. I would be so mad.
Yeah. Oh. Can you imagine being dead, haunting Longview, Texas to the end of time?
Oh my God.
Watching Virgin River season 5 over and over.
I mean, that's a really upsetting fate. And we didn't even finish the whole season. Last year, me and you got together and we watched the whole thing. There's no way I could have done that this year. There's no way. My body shut down and
I couldn't take it.
Reset, hard rebooted halfway through. And I have had so many moments over the past few days of just, I'll be going about my business, having a great fucking time. And something like goddamn poison from that show will bubble up out of the folds of my brain.
And Preacher?
Oh, and kneecap me.
Thanks for
the text. Oh, God damn it. That was what did it. That was what truly did it. But the ending song after everything, God damn it. It is the biggest piece of steaming hot fucking garbage. I died because of it.
Yeah.
I stood up. Yeah. We decided we were going to bed. It was after the Anahata's live show, which was great. It was so good.
It was a good time.
Oh my God. It was the best time. You were the devil.
We got in costumes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was a Skelly. I was a Skeleton.
A Skellington?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was the devil.
And it was great. That was great. That was pure, is what that was. And
it was wonderful. And we had candy corn.
We did.
And we told spooky stories. And we had just a grand old time. We got to see the outlines of friends.
Yes. Yeah, because we could get a little. And it was cool. Y'all had glow sticks and shit on. And there was mood lighting in the cafeteria where they did it. It looked super great. That was great. That was the best part.
That was
part.
Great. But then we followed it.
Yeah. Yeah. We tainted
with
it.
It's like we got it backwards. You know, when you take like a child to the dentist and it's really terrible.
Yeah.
And then, but then you leave and you get like ice cream or you get your sucker or your toy from the little box.
Yeah.
We did it backwards. Yeah. We did the toy first.
We went to the dentist as a reward and it was a terrible
idea.
As a
reward.
And we got halfway through it. It was about 1 a.m. And we just kind of, at this point, you and I were both so shell-shocked that we stood up and we're like, we're going to bed.
Well, I mean, after the moment where you almost lost your life.
Yeah. What did that look like for you?
Okay, let me tell you here. Let me excuse the shuffling noises. I'm gonna get really comfortable here while I tell you what happened.
Okay, sure.
And keep all of this in mind. This was all while we didn't even have Freddy's. That's our tradition.
I think that's what the problem was. I think because we weren't grounded by Freddy's to keep us keep us tethered to who we are, I broke because of it.
Yeah.
I think, well, Freddy's is crucial.
We got what would you say about 5 episodes deep, I think, into Verge Riv season 5, because our plan was to just have it on and to not really dissect it too much like we will be doing for SimCap. But to just sort of let it wash over us, because we need that. We needed that.
Yeah.
And it was bad because it's a virgin river, and we'll go no further into that. We'll save it.
I would say heinous, but go on.
There was a particular moment that, listen, if you join SimCap with us this next upcoming season just to hear about this moment, I feel like it would be worth it.
Oh my God.
But there was a moment where just something so uncanny valley, I think is how I would describe it, happened in the show. It's just, it's not how people talk, which is on par for Virgin River. But it was just, everything about it was wrong.
Yeah.
And although we had spent a lot of time laughing at the show and exchanging little cringe faces, as we do, this one really got to you, Macy, because it broke you. But what sent you over was at the end of the episode, Virgin River has this bad habit of being way too on the nose with the music.
Yes.
And for we did a recap. And of course we had subtitles on, you know, and the subtitles will get, the music will get caught up in the subtitles, and someone from season 4 said something about, you're a liar, or you lied, or whatever, and right after that the song comes on that's like, lie. So, but something like that happened, and they played this heinous rendition of fucking How to Save a Life, and it was
the stake through my heart.
I've seen you get caught up into laugh fits, but this was worrying.
No.
And I was in a laugh at myself because, like, it was hilarious, but B, I would, like, look at you and that would kick me off and stuff. But, like, you had to full-on do the head between the knees trick.
And you were
begging for it to stop.
My body went into convulsions. Wrong. I feel like it had to shake loose everything that I had just taken in. Because I remember I stood up, we both stood up, and I said, all right. Okay. And then my voice started to do that lilty kind of hysterical thing. I remember saying, like, I don't know what to do here. And then
I don't know what to do. And then
folded like a flower. Over. Yeah. And I had my head in my hands, and I just remember wanting it to end. And it went on forever and ever and ever.
About half of the noises you made was laughing.
Yeah.
And I could be like, oh, she's laughing. But the other half were like goose honks.
It was horrible.
And it was from the deep part of your taint,
yeah,
where you force that air up and it comes out and like,
yeah.
And it sounded painful.
It was horrible.
And it looked painful.
Awful.
And I couldn't do anything but let it happen.
Yeah, and laugh too.
And also laugh, but like get worried at the end, so like kind of stop laughing. But
I did. I felt like the fibers of my muscles rejected everything that I had done to myself.
I feel like we stood there for about 3 minutes afterwards, and just sort of looked around with watering eyes, and then just silently like trudged upstairs into our individual bedrooms and just went to bed.
Yeah, in shock.
And that was the last I saw of you, because you left super early, and I got up and I left early as well. But that was the last time I've seen your corporeal form, so I don't know if you're alive.
Every now and again, I keep thinking I'm going to pass away because I'll remember something that happened. And it'll just, man, it will just be a knife through my sails.
Yeah.
Like, I will just be so knocked off kilter by the uncanny valley bullshit, the goddamn grape nuts nightmare that is that show.
Dude. Have you ever seen that show, The Good Place?
No, but I've heard a lot of things about it.
So, cover ears for mild spoilers for the season 1 of The Good Place, right? Essentially, the main character dies in the first episode, and the whole show is the afterlife, basically, right? And they go to The Good Place, and it's all, like, overly good. Like, something's not quite right about it, and you find out why. But like, and Macy, I'll just tell you, one of us can cut this part out. But basically, anyway, after you find that big surprise that I hope we cut out, you just understand, you're like, everything's just a little wrong.
Yeah.
And that's what this show feels like.
Yeah.
Virgin River feels like an episode of The Good Place.
It's because it's written by ChatGPT. I refuse to believe anything else.
And then the guy with the dirty dick comes in the room and he says something about drugs.
I can't. We can't get into this.
Yeah. No. We're here. Which segue brings us to our next. Listen, this welcome to Wabah. This is the Wabah podcast, a podcast, believe it or not, about witchcraft. And I'm Charlie and I'm not crazy. I'm just a little unwell.
I'm not crazy. I'm just a little unwell.
My high school boyfriend at the time thought that the lyrics were, I'm not crazy, I'm just a little lonely. And now when I hear it, I'm not crazy, I'm just a little lonely.
Oh, my name is Macy and I want to push you around. Yeah, I will. Yeah, I want to take you for granted.
I want to take you for granted. Apparently that song is in the Barbie movie, which I still have not seen.
I know. God damn it. I know.
I wanted to see it in theaters. I just kept putting it off.
I think it's still in theaters. We just need to go see it in theaters.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That's what we should have done and seen instead of Virgin fucking River.
No, yeah. We just poisoned ourselves instead.
What are we talking about this episode? Not Virgin River related.
Oh, thank God. I'm doing something a little bit different from normal. Because today I guess this is similar to kind of the Running with Sherman episode and like the review sort of, but okay. I'm talking today about a new film.
Kushiel's Dark.
No, no, all 30 hours.
Yeah.
But
it's all of the simp caps stitched together.
This episode posts and it's just hours and hours and hours. Yeah. Like we don't explain it. And then sandwich it at the very end and be like, so anyway, my topic today is going to be, and then just continue with the normal episode after the last part of this.
Put it in the middle as an ad for simp cap.
That's awesome. A brand new film that just came out, made by Planet Weird, which is the new Kirks, who I'm a big fan of. This movie is called The Unbinding. And I just really wanted to talk about it today. I'm not going to get into a lot of specific details because I encourage everybody to watch this film because it is just the delicious, open-minded approach to the paranormal that we all need, that like the world needs. Mm. And it's just a very compassionate story. And I really wanted to talk about it today because I think that it was just really, really well made. I've seen whispers about it from some people in the coven. And I know there's crossover because I feel like our coven is the kind of people to really be into this.
You know what's weird is the Venn diagram of the Wabah podcast fan base, the spooky stuff fan base, and the Twilight shit posting group is just a circle.
It's the group you want to be in, bro. And yeah, so I'm gonna talk about it today and just a bit of the backstory around it as just a kind of a review. And in case you've seen it and you're wondering about it, but I do recommend watching it because it is it's just a very beautifully made film and very thought provoking. And it made my very concrete eyeballs shed some tears. So,
oh
yeah. Yeah.
At first, I thought you said your very pond creek eyeballs.
Which would actually be very applicable to this story. But, and I mean both eyeballs, too. Not even just the broken one.
Like whoa. Both of them.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And I, too, am doing something slightly different. Just in that I don't have a solid. First of all, I'm breaking from fucking crystals for a little while. I got my head out of the rock game for just a minute. But this time, I'm not picking one particular thing. I'm just talking about incense today.
Okay,
I just kind of got like on a, I just got like on an incense thing earlier, and I was just like, "Wow, there's so many ways to do it, man." And I was like, "That's what I'm going to talk about." And I have a little recipe for an incense that a lot of us can do, because I think there's, I think it's easy and it's got stuff in it that is easy to get your hands on, or you probably already have your hands on. And anyway, we're going to just talk about incense. It's not just fragrant smoke.
Wow. Who knew? I'm excited about that. It's fun to make incense. I love to make my own little blends and whatnot.
Yeah. 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 Oh, yeah. What's your favorite type? You go for that loose incense? You make a cone?
Here's the thing. If I'm making it, I'm making it loose, because I don't always have the patience to cone them all up. I've done it once. and that was enough for me. Because I like a good disc. I like a charcoal disc. I got that butane torch. Yeah. So anytime I can use my torch to light my disc, I'm going to do it, because I feel cool. And I like the continuous tossing and mixing of things. And I kind of treat my little cauldron burning thing like a cauldron of its own, like really. And just like what I'm feeling, just throw shit in there as it goes.
And there's benefits to both. You know, there's benefits to doing the loose, the cone versus, you know, whatever.
Because I'll buy cone incense. I just don't want to make them. If I'm making it, it's loose. But if sometimes I love me a cone. I kind of pick the cones sometimes over the sticks, because I feel like you almost get like a thicker, oilier,
oilier smoke. I want to talk about that too.
Yeah.
I'm going to let some personal.
Wow. We're going to hear some
preference fly.
Some thoughts, some brave thoughts.
Some brave, brave hot takes.
Okay.
Listen, shut up. But you know what the bravest and the hottest take is?
Oh, what?
It's our Patreon shout out segment.
Thank you, Patreon.
The bravest and hottest hot take person? I don't know. The bravest and hottest person of this episode.
You're doing
is Melanie
really well.
S.
Okay.
Thanks.
Melanie S. I see, and I feel like this is a bit of a recycle, so it's not even fair to do it, but it fits so well that my brain slurped it up immediately, and it's, I wanna push you around. Wait, no, sorry, I got it backwards. What was it, Melanie S?
Melanie S, I wanna push you around, Melanie S.
Right when I started singing it, I was like, that's not the song. And then I forgot the song was.
Maybe we should do something, maybe we should do a good Smash Mouth as like a nice little R.I.P.
Okay, which one?
Are we? Somebody wants.
Are we going to do the one? Which, did I ever tell you that was almost going to be what I did an interpretive kind of dance to for fifth grade talent show, was going to be that song?
Stop it.
But it wound up not being, and it wound up being Thriller instead, in which I learned the entire dance to Thriller and did it in front of all of my peers on stage in fifth grade.
That's fucking sick, though.
It was fine.
Second of all, if there was footage of a little fifth grade Macy out there doing an interpretive dance to Somebody Once Told Me the World Was Gonna Roll, I would sell it for
it. Wasn't money. Coming together very good. Like, I remember kind of being like, we need a choreographed dance, because this is not coming together with, like, even fifth grade me didn't have whimsy in that regard. I was like, this is not good entertainment.
Oh, born an entertainer, raised an entertainer.
Yeah.
You'll die in an entertaining way, I'm sure.
I will. I better. Okay, we need a Patreon song. Because
Melanie S.
I whiffed it.
Might as well be walking on Melanie S.
Wow. Why can't I think of any Smash Mouth songs aside from Walking on the Sun and fucking All Star? Oh, I'm a believer. When I saw her face, Melanie S, without a trace of doubt in my mind, I'm in love. Ooh, I'm a believer. I forgot they did that. I didn't even know that was them, to be honest.
Huh.
Who knew?
You can tell which generation people belong to by whether or not they think of Shrek.
Yeah.
With both of those songs, really.
Well, it is not our fault that the Shrek soundtrack was iconic as all fucking hell.
What are you going to do?
Just kicks the door in. It's so good.
And the fucking second one.
Dude, the second one's better than the first one.
You say that every time. You have very strong
feelings. I have the strongest feelings. That's one of the few examples of the second film being so much better than that. And the first one's good.
You know, people say that.
Yeah.
People say that about The Godfather, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, I've...
All right.
Damn. Heavy. Wow. Damn. Godfather 2 and Shrek 2 are in the same league. Caliber films.
I mean, frankly.
I would...
Come on.
I would hold that. I would hold that. Fucking to that regard.
Yeah.
Fucking Shrek 2 was a phenomenon. And like a good one for good reason.
And just in the pervasive iconicness of it. Yeah.
God damn, it was so
Come
good.
On.
It was so fucking good. Anyway, who goes first today?
Let me check my butt.
I had
it's you.
A little bit of coffee before I started and I regret it because I feel I like sure I'm hope. Coming in really hot today and like just intense.
I love it.
I feel like I'm like on my mic energy. Really close already.
Do it.
Anyway, so I want to talk about The Unbinding, guys. I am very excited for this film. I have been waiting and watching for details of this film for years now, just kind of wanting it, waiting for it. And the Newkirks...
The Gunguzla.
The Gunguzla. The Newkirks and their team of Connor and Carl, my God, and Tyler, I've really been following them a lot. They directly have changed a lot of my ways personally that I view the paranormal and that I react to things, like concerning my own fear towards things like spirits and haunted objects. And what we see in The Unbinding is a story of compassion, truly. And there are very, very spooky scenes in this film. This is a great one for this spooky time of year that we're rolling into. Because it is, in truth, it is a ghost story. But it's so much more than that.
Can I ask you, and I'm sorry for already interrupting so much. I will try to shut my trap. But is this a... horror film, or is this like a documentary?
This is a documentary. So,
okay,
I'm gonna kind of explain a little bit about like who they are, who like the Newkirks are, and why this would be made, and the story of this object. But yeah, this is a documentary film. It is made by Planet Weird. It's made by the same group that made Hellier. If you have seen Hellier, you know I've talked, I feel like, way crazily about Hellier a lot on this show and in bonus episodes and probably lives. This is
I'm still getting confused with Outlander.
I don't want to even get into it.
I can't explain it to you.
And it makes my blood pressure spike a little bit.
Just the second you said it, Hellier popped into my mind. I was like, oh yeah, that.
And God. And so The Unbinding is a documentary, but it's a feature length film. So instead of a series like Hellier is, it's a documentary film. And in this, this film surrounds a particular haunted object called the Crone of the Catskills. And basically, there's very spooky scenes, again, involving this item, about what it does once it's in people's possession initially, and we'll get to how it came to be with that. But this isn't a movie about evil, and it's not a movie about demons. It's a film about understanding and not reacting to something with fear, but trying to understand, maybe help things that might need it, even though to us it comes across, especially in this, like, new attempt of a satanic panic that is brewing all around. And also by most modern paranormal ghost hunting TV, it's like, it's evil. This film isn't about that. It's like going the other way about that, it being like, well, hold on. Let's look at this for a second and study it instead of reacting to it as assuming it's, you know, the devil and things of that nature. Which I think is important. And it's something that, well, and this is, of course, new information, but for me, it is something their perspective on that has helped me a lot in my own confrontations with things like this.
The devil?
No, not thinking things are evil. And I've talked before about, like, I'm not just too keen on that word anyway. I think there's way better descriptors for paranormal behavior. And The Unbinding shows this. But first, let's set this up a little bit. I'm not going to give full details on the story because I highly recommend you all throw these guys, throw Planet Weird, a little bit of money. I paid like $4 to rent it on YouTube. It's an independent production company like us, but way bigger and more successful. But still, they're out there spending years making this. So if you can, give them some compensation for it. It's like less than an energy drink and like a snack from the gas station, you know?
I love that. And I'm sorry. I really like when people like put things in comparison because it makes my brain understand it.
Yeah. And also we live in an age, especially once like streaming has become the norm to where it's like the paying for media is a bit more of a diluted transaction. It's not direct, really. And so it's like the seeing out of creators and paying them for their work, unfortunately, isn't as common anymore because of services like Spotify and things like that. I mean, like our show is a free show, but it's like we rely on Patreon to keep it going.
Patreon.com/WBAH podcast.
Yeah. And it's just as people who rely on being paid for our content, it's important to remember that there's something beautiful about independent creators in a world in which a lot of it is like big conglomerates and studios and companies and podcasts that get bought up by like, you know, big parent companies. Like, you got some people out there and they are way better at it than us, but making their own things. No. And that's just an important thing to be able to help maintain.
It's sort of like once you've been wait staff, you will never not tip again. Or like once you work in retail, you will never be shitty to a retail person. It's just sort of like, that's what I feel like it is. Because when I see independent people doing independent entertainment type stuff, I'm like, I know that.
Yeah. 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 I understand that. I want to support that. And so to those who don't know, who the hell are the Newkirks? I'm just talking about them like you all know who they are because you should know. I will tell you about them. So they are Greg and Dana Newkirk. They are a couple that have been running for years now the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and Occult. And I mentioned them years back. I mean, like maybe like episode 5, because they were in like 2018 who I wanted to send Katrina the Doll to. And I wasn't able to because they were closed at that point. And I'm so fucking glad that I didn't, because like now me would address that whole situation so much. I wouldn't have felt the need to send it off. You know, like I could have dealt with it and maybe like tried to understand it and see what the tumult within this was about, you know. So I'm glad that I didn't ship it to them because I would have been like hella embarrassed now. So this is one of those things that I'm like, I'm really glad that didn't pan out. But they do run this museum, and I would love to go to it so badly. And Greg and Dana have investigated the paranormal together and apart since they were teenagers. Meeting around then, and like, it's a really cute, their story is cute, but they were like in, like, not like rivals, not the right word, but like, they both were in like into like ghost hunting groups, like as teenagers.
Cute.
And it's a really cute story. And since then, they've...
What was the thing you did your topic on for the Anahata? Was it the ghost club?
The
ghost hunting club? What was it?
The ghost club.
The ghost club.
The ghost club. Yeah. And so over the years, Greg and Dana have grown to amass quite an incredible paranormal museum collection, which you might know a little bit about if you listen to the Haunted Objects podcast, which I really love. It comes out bi-weekly. The Newkirks and their team of Carl and Connor and research assistant Keelan put out every 2 weeks. And it's really beautifully produced. Like, it's goals, honestly, because like I'm a museum member. So I get the videos and I watch the production of it. And it's so well made. And it's like, oh, my God, it's so good. They have this museum of all of these objects and really, really interesting things, and they're continuously acquiring stuff. And if none of that sounds familiar, like I mentioned, you might remember a little project by the name of Hellier. And Hellier changed a lot of the way that I look at things, as it did for a lot of people who experienced the initiation, that is the second season of this show. And if you've not watched it, do it. Again, excellent Spooky Time TV. Excellent. Y'all, we're here. We've made it. Come on. Let's lean in. You want it. And there's two seasons of it, and it's amazing how far it unfolds from the first season to where the viewer thinks it's just, you get to see paranormal investigation in and I say this in quotations, like, new way, and I mean that like for media, but in a refreshing way, because to those that have investigated the paranormal before, it might look a little bit more familiar. There are lulls, you know, and some people complain and call their work boring, but I disagree with it completely. Because it's not the Bags like screaming around, yeah, yelling about demons and locking teammates up or being like, bro, look at this 3-claw scratch I got from a portal to hell. A demon got me, bro. It's not happening.
If you've been on legitimate ghost hunts, you know that sometimes nothing happens.
Right. And their work is performed with a sense of reverence. You know, not kind of like the blatant trampling that you see in other shows. And what you see with the new Kirks is oftentimes in their investigations is something called the Estes method, which is an interesting form of mediumship that I really have been wanting to try since like the moment that I saw them use it in the first season of Hellier. But this team, they're here to investigate and ask questions and examine the whole of the phenomenon, which is something that I think is the most refreshing. Whether it be goblins or fae, ghosts, aliens, cults, cryptid, pan, ultra-terrestrials, maybe it's all happening at once. They're open to it. And maybe it's all connected, because maybe the phenomenon is all connected. And maybe they'll seek tarot cards for guidance at some point. If they're like, ah, oh, let's just pull the deck out. And let you see that in one scene in Hellier. They're kind of like, let's just draw some cards and just kind of see what they say for direction. You know, and it's like, as a practicing witch, it's like, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Because it's divination.
Yeah.
It's spirit.
But exactly. And I mean, that's not too far off from what you and I we've done, like with Jordan, when we've gone on hunts before, you know, is do cards and kind of keep in mind that. Even if you're just looking at it as like advice, but still, like, if there's spirits there and you're a diviner, fucking use it.
Yeah. And I think that's something that you see get like the question presented by the new Kirks in their actions, which is like, where's the line? Like, who are you to say like that spirit, but this isn't? And if you're going to say ghosts are real and you're here on an investigation, why block yourself up under a ceiling? You know, like, open up and use all of the tools around you. And I just think that that's the right way to go about this, where nothing really is off the table. Because in my opinion, there's no place for a closed mind in paranormal investigation. Like, though so often you find them, which is baffling. And it's a really open-minded approach that you find in their work, not separated by camps, kind of caused by what you can sometimes see as like a bullheaded clutching to beliefs, just like how like you have a lot of UFO people that are nuts and bolts. There's no psychic aspect of the phenomenon. No, it's nuts and bolts, aliens. And, you know, they won't believe anything else. They'll violently get angry when they hear anything else suggested. Or, you know, the same thing like Bigfoot hunters refuse to acknowledge all of the psychic strange energy powers that he exudes over and over and over again in cases. And he's just a flesh and blood creature. Like, I don't get it. Why are you walling yourself off? Because if you're going to believe in aliens, if you're going to believe in Bigfoot, why stop halfway? Like, why be a believer, but only on your terms? You know, like when you're talking about the paranormal, why limit yourself? I don't understand it. And I think that's why I find the new Kirks and their work so refreshing, because it's just like, man, if we all worked together and compiled our knowledge, we might be able to start figuring some things out, because it's not as simple as all of this fractioning off, I don't think. And I think that's where we get the beauty of the story of the unbinding, which I'll finally be kind of going to get into what that's about in a bit more detail. It's a story about a haunted object that many would have reacted to violently in fear, honestly, myself included. while, you know, I wouldn't have gone maybe as far as destroying it or anything like that, but a lot of people would react violently to this object because of what it caused and the activity that surrounded it. And because of the halfway belief of many that something like this has to be evil, because what other option could there be for something to be doing all of these things? But the Newkirks present an option of maybe it's neither. Maybe it's good nor bad. It's in between. And Dana Newkirk is a longtime hedge witch, and I love watching her work in their productions, and she adds a really refreshing and beautiful perspective. She folds in her witchcraft background into the investigations. It's a huge pillar of what they do when they investigate. And she has a lovely speech talking about things that we might find ourselves afraid of in the film. And I just wanted to put it in here. Because she says, if you go back and you look at the stories of most of our ancestors, a lot of those stories are scary. And that doesn't make them evil. It makes them complex. It makes them human. And that's the irony. The irony is it's the complexity that often gets looked at as evil, when it's something that should actually touch us on such a deep human level that we recognize these stories are us, that they are a part of us. And my hope is that people will walk away and recognize that sometimes things are very scary because they are real. And sometimes things are scary because that's part of the growth process. And sometimes things are scary because they have to be scary. Shit has to be scary sometimes for us to change. It has to be scary for us to have an initiatory experience. It has to be scary for growth spiritually. We can't always sit in this place of love and light. We have to recognize that scary things are just the complexities of us as people and the complexities of a spiritual growth process. And I just thought that was really beautifully said. And
well, yeah, you have, there has to be an element of like uncomfortable to make change. Otherwise, you're just comfortable.
Yeah. And just because something is uncomfortable or frightening doesn't mean it's bad. Those things don't equate necessarily. And they are open about the fact that this object, in particular, the Crone of the Catskills, really opened a lot of their thoughts, changed their minds a bit about how haunted objects are viewed and handled in their eyes. And so let's talk about her. Let's talk about this item in which the film The Unbinding is centered around. And the Crone of the Catskills was found in the Catskill Mountain Range in upstate New York by two hikers, I believe in 2016. That was one thing I didn't write down when I watched it. And one of them did the thing you really don't generally think to do when they found this item up on this mountain on their hike. They took it home, which was bold, okay, considering what she looked like. The Crone... Sure. is a statue, probably I would say about 13 inches tall, dark stained, carved wood, kind of tall and slim, you know, like very long feature, kind of like a, you know, kind of like a, those willow tree dolls that are like very tall on the bases, but like kind of like minimal features, yeah, you know, the ones. But a lot more kind of like rougher hewn than that. I recommend looking up a picture of her because she's intense.
If I do that, will I be cursed?
No. Because in each of her eyes, three nails have been hammered, and around her neck was a white corded noose. So that's what these two hikers found, this dark wooden statue with three nails hammered in each eye and a noose around the neck. And one of them was like, I'm fucking taking this home, bro.
I don't, I would say I wouldn't, but honestly, she looks kind of sick.
I agree that she looks fucking tight, man. She looks badass. Yeah. But here's the thing. I have a theory kind of, but I'm going to get into it. But me, no, I would not take her. But maybe she was meant to be taken. I don't know.
She kind of reminds me of the head you made me. The It's Happening, or that you found.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's that very stark kind of like, kind of vibe. And one of the hikers wanted no part of it, though, but the other one took it. And but I do wonder now if maybe he was supposed to take her. And take her, he did. And not long after, a Reddit post appeared on a paranormal subreddit in 2016, written by the hiker that didn't take her. But he was worried about his buddy because strange things were happening following him bringing her and his friend bringing her back to the apartment. And one, statue moving all over the place. Just, he'll find it all over the place and weird, and it's just like not where he left it. And before long, he starts finding these wet, dirty, like wet soil footprints all throughout the apartment. And this like smell, this like dank kind of like wet dog smell, pond kind of smell all around. And like that was starting to become apparent. And this activity built. And again, I'm not wanting to spell it all out for you guys because it's just too good of a story. I don't want to spoil it all. But the activity builds. And apparently this friend posts on Reddit and somebody commented on this post like, you need to contact like the Newkirks. I don't remember if you said them both or just Greg Newkirk, but you need to, this is what they do. And Greg actually, Greg posted on that Reddit thread with instructions of what to do, like not even necessarily getting involved because it's like, here's what you could do to fix this. You know, one, you could apologize, take it back up there. And he had a whole long informative list of what you can do in a situation like this. And apparently though, so the guys had not, his friend had long, well, not long, but I think he like ditched out on his apartment because it got too bad. And stayed with a friend. So he and the friend go back to the apartment to get the crone and they open the door. And one, the dog doesn't want to go in. It's like, fuck this. Not a fan. Don't like the vibe.
Trust the animals.
Trust the animals. And so they go into the room or they go into the apartment. And again, there's like the footprints in the water all dribbled around. And they then, though, saw her. Not the statue either. In a dark corner, like emaciated and dripping wet, hiding in the shadows.
Stop.
But with these like gleaming eyes, they both saw this crone looking at them from the corner. And they lose their shit. As, I mean, is fair. You know, like I can't tell you what my psyche would go through if I saw something like that. I would like to think that I would be composed, but I do not think so. I do not think so. One bit.
A person?
Well, an entity.
Was it like an
apparition?
Was she see-through, solid? Was she like...
I don't know the details of that. It seems like she was pretty damn obvious because they were able to like see that she was wet, you know, and like dripping water. And so after...
But also, was she mean?
She was just...
Or she just
staring,
standing there.
Staring at them.
Menacingly.
And they said like through the dark, her eyes shined. You could see them shining. Okay. And so after this, they were like, yeah, we can't take her back. We can't take her back. We can't do it. Please just let us mail her to you. Please. We can't deal with this. They wrap her up in a pillowcase, put her in a box, mail her to the haunted objects P.O. box that the Newkirks manage for the Museum of the Paranormal or the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and Occult. But I think this is because she intended this. I think she was meant to go. I think she wanted to go. I think, I don't know. We're going to get into it. But when they received her, they treated her as they do every other haunted object because they get a lot of haunted objects with a lot of scary backstories and they photographed her and kind of cataloged and moved on, assuming that she would do nothing as most haunted objects do, because they say oftentimes the phenomenon is personal. And when you remove the person from the equation, the object generally does nothing for them. And that's not to say that they don't believe the people that send the stuff in. It's just that when you remove that personal aspect, it didn't really act up anymore, but not this object, not the crone of the Catskills. And later on, they hear a thud come from the office. And I think it was later on that night, or it was very soon after. And Greg goes to check it out. What is that? Because they've got multiple cats. You know, he's like, I bet the cats are in the office, like wilding out. You know, let me go get the cats.
Doing what cats do.
Doing what cats do. But the office door is closed. And when he gets to the hallway, he turns to look, and they have one of those for the bedroom, like, doors kind of right by the office door. And he sees the cats are terrified hiding under the bed, which...
Believe the animals.
Freaky. And they say, like, that he says that. It's like, there are great little meters for psychic energy going on, you know, pets. And he opens the office door, and he says he didn't see much going on, much amiss, until he almost steps on Jesus. And...
What?
In this office, he has, there's like a wooden cross with like the golden, like 3D print, like not 3D printed, but like 3D Jesus hanging on it. So it's not like he's painted, but it's like got the actual like metal Jesus or plaster Jesus on it, you know? And they have one in the office. And on the floor, like well away from where this cross is hanging on the wall, is Jesus, but he's broken off the cross. And when he goes to look at the cross, hanging on it is just one little hand and arm still attached. But everything else, the arm or like at the elbow or a little further at the shoulder, was snapped off. And with how this thing is attached to the wall, it was like one of the, it's like a finishing nail job. You know, when you just like hang on a single nail and you're like, that's not the sturdiest thing the world, but it'll do. It's kind of like that deal. And it's like somebody would have had to brace it with one hand and snap off Jesus and then chuck him a little bit. And sitting right underneath, just sitting there like nothing happened, was the crone, the statue, right underneath it in the chair where they left it.
Like nothing happened.
And
twiddling her thumbs.
And Dana speaks here saying, like, of course, it's never ideal for religious iconography of any kind to be desecrated in a paranormal situation. But already they take an approach of investigation here, you know, that something, this is something is upset. It was upset by the situation, and you know, of being in proximity to it by the iconography, not necessarily evil, but you know, there it reacted, but it doesn't, you know, those two things don't have to equate to each other. They'd be like, oh, we're dealing with a demon, it destroyed a cross, you know. And soon after, though, one night, Dana finds wet footprints standing on the back of the couch, which is, I think, the worst place maybe to find wet footprints, because that is so creepy. The back of the couch. The back. Imagine a wet crone just standing on the back of the couch.
Gross.
Hate it.
Why is she wet?
Well, that's something I'm not going to get into today because I think it's an interesting revelation that you should just get to watch in the film because it's too cool. But they do give their theory as to why. And so then there was another instance that happened later on, and Dana doesn't really go into detail much, but they were both in bed kind of like going to sleep, and she saw something come into the room one night. And she doesn't say much. She just describes it as a waking nightmare. And Greg, not used to seeing... Listen, I just can't imagine what it takes to rattle Dana Newkirk. Truly. I can't imagine. And so Greg seeing Dana scared is like, oh shit, like, what was it? Like, what happened? You know? And so then, like, not, like, right around this too, on a game cam, because this, they know the details of this thing moving around, they catch this thing and they show the footage. This thing fucking moves on camera. And it's slight, but like it, like I was watching it and it got a good like gasp out of me and my eyes watered. Like it was just kind of like, oh my God, what? This is so sweet. And so around all of this, my dogs are barking. I know it's the trash truck because trash truck comes on Tuesdays and they don't cope well.
Because you're talking about her.
Nah, she's good now. And so after this, they set the crone down and they have a talk with her, as they do with many items. And they kind of lay down the rules here. Like, listen, you play nice with us, you can share the space. This is a spirit of cohabitation here. Like, we'll have
stick your fingers in our mouth when we sleep.
Yeah, we'll have no problems. But like, golly, do you hear them out there? Like, that is awful. And so But like, we're not, if we don't have any issues, like we can just, we can coexist. It's going to be fine. But at this time, they start hearing like running water, like the sound of rushing water in their house. And not long before this, they had suffered from having a busted pipe in their house, which is like one of the biggest fears of living in a domain. And so it sounds like that. And they take off running towards it, leaving the crone sitting on the coffee table. And they get there and the sound stops. There is nothing wrong at all. And they go back towards the room and she's missing. She's not on the coffee table anymore. And they look for her and Greg finds her underneath the TV stand. And eventually he sees her there. And when he goes to get on his knees to pick her up, Dana notices that the TV on its own starts leaning over as if something is pushing it to fall on Greg. And she like stops it, you know, and he reaches underneath and gets her and they catch it, or she catches it before it falls. And they set the crone down and they're like, listen, you're going to go into the box if you keep this up. Like, we're going to have to put you up. And then like they say that, and then there's like these bangs that happen on the wall and they're like, okay, okay then. So she gets wrapped up and she gets put in a box. But not for long, not forever. Because it's eventually time for the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and Occult to set up at Michigan Paracon. And what folds on this day, I also just want to leave to the film, because this is such a good movie. It's such a good story. But it lays the groundwork of what they are to do with this item. And again, I'm moving past some stuff here. But as I mentioned above, this is a story of compassion. And before long, it becomes realized that the crone maybe needs to go back to where she was found. However, they are a museum after all, and they want to preserve this item and to do so with the help of a friend of theirs, who has known Greg forever. It's Jason. His name is Jason. And he's a 3D, like scanner and printer. So he has the equipment to like do 3D scans and print stuff, replications. Mm. And they go to do this scan on the crone. And because they take really open-minded approaches to investigations, Dana at this time is doing an Estes method session. So she's plugged into a spirit box. She can't hear what's going on with them. And she has her eyes covered. And in the cans, that's taking up her entire hearing ability, is just the spirit box sounds. So she's separated from them, but having a medium experience while they are scanning the crone who's sitting in the room. And this scene is heartbreaking. Like, it is really upsetting. And what comes out in this scene is perhaps something is trapped against its will, maybe. And we see Dana navigate two voices, two very, very different voices. And it changes the view of this item quite a bit. Something that maybe is lashing out because it's bound unfairly, uncomfortably in this effigy. And it's, you know, this is where you see a lot of the convergence of, we have to help this thing, fucking scary as this item has been. Because I've left out a lot of the happenings, a lot of what they tell this item doing, or the phenomenon that happened around it. But it's not evil, it's angry and maybe afraid, because it seems, according to this session, that something not good has been done to the spirit, and whatever it was, maybe it wasn't just. And a lot of strange shit happens with the 3D scan, including like multiple instances. I got eye waters from like the intensity of the creep factor of this item that you see in this film. Because it seems like the file starts manipulating itself and it reveals some truly freaky imagery that happens like in a corruption of this file. But again, I want y'all to see that and take it in on your own because it's nuts. But so begins a coordinated and difficult, honestly dangerous because of the weather, plan to not only return the crone, but maybe unbind her, free her. But this is difficult because they need a replica for the museum. And you get a character by the name of Tyler Strand here, who you might recognize if you've seen Hellier. And he's a remarkably talented sculpture and special effects artist. And he made the really, so if you've watched Hellier and at the end of the intro that it ends on this like beautiful goblin bust, he made that. And it's, he's very skilled. And it's like, he met them through a friend and it's clear that he's the guy to take it on, but it won't be easy because there's a ritual component to this that has to be done. Dana is a witch. And these are people that understand and care for the paranormal. And this unbinding will be a ritual taking place in a ritual space on a freezing cold mountain in late fall. And it's a ritual that the crone effigy won't be coming back from. And in order to make a mold for preservation, they have to do it all up there. It's such a cool, so many things all have to happen here in order for them to be able to pull off not only this ritual, but the preserving and the replication for the museum in order to kind of complete the whole task. And the ritual of the unbinding is highly emotional. It is, I really cried in it. Especially like watching Tyler's part in it, because he speaks some things to the crone and it is just very, very touching. And it's just, again, it's, I don't want to spell it all out because it's really beautiful. And, but you see things as, especially as a witch, that make your heart sore. Like in seeing a film on paranormal investigation. You see a ritual space get cast. You see, you know, she consecrates all of the tools, everything. Like everything. I want to say in the live stream, like their museum member live stream, like even the firewood that they chose that they were going to burn in the fire, she can't, like everything. If it was brought, if it was going to be used, they had to bring it into the ritual space beforehand. And if she casted the circle and set this all up and it was sitting outside of the circle, too fucking bad. We can't use it. So it was like, it was all sealed up and very intense. And it, I love seeing Dana's witchcraft heeded with such respect from all members of the team. Granted, it's Dana Newkirk. So like, how are you going to watch her practice and not be like awestruck, you know, but still like seeing witchcraft have a place at the paranormal investigation table where it belongs, because they go hand in hand. Like if anybody, I feel like is going to, well, not if anybody, that's a bit like, but like witches are going to, I feel like, approach the paranormal with a level of understanding and respect that will be helpful in a paranormal investigation situation. It just, they fit.
Right.
And so another thing that I don't really want to go into detail of is their theory of what is trapped or was trapped within the crone, because it's a fascinating turn that adds a lot of meaning to the story, because perhaps maybe no mere ghost was within this effigy, but something older, greater, a bit more vast, Jesus? Perhaps. No. Wouldn't that be interesting? It just like Jesus goes up and is like, I hate this version of me, and just like rips his own self off the cross.
Yeah.
And
he throws a fit. That's the Jesus I
that want. There you go. Yeah. Throw a whole wall-eyed fit. And as we just see, it's neat to see in the film that pieces come together after they get back, even that point to their theory in a way that is very interesting. But leaving it all, you know, it's a very, like, I remember it ended in Hunter and I just sat in silence for a while and just kind of thinking about it. And I've thought about it a lot since I have watched it. And the one thing that I think of is, I think that this crone wanted, I think that she wanted to go to them. That I think while bound, there was some shred of control that through multiple steps, she was able to kind of like the ring of power, you know, like when those hikers showed up, be like, take me.
She wants to be found.
Yeah. And it's just like, and because I she went to perhaps the only people on Earth that would have truly helped this item in this way. Because had she been left on a mountaintop, perhaps she'd be bound forever. And had others been too frightened, had they taken her of her manifestations, because again, I didn't even get into like, there's so many more things that happened around this item when it was in the possession of the Newkirks and co surrounding people. And a lot of people's first instinct after seeing that might not be, let's release this thing, you know? And I think the crone of the Catskills somehow made it to two people that would understand. And they would look at something so unruly and frightening with compassion. And it's doing kind of the hard but the right thing, expressing understanding and care towards something that's lashed out so intensely at all of them and their friends. And there's just kind of like, there's a mantra that I carry for myself, that I'll just, I think about in times when I need it. And it's when I need to see things from other perspectives, and it's, you don't have to understand to be understanding, you know? And I feel like you see that here, because initially the Newkirks had no clue what they were dealing with. They didn't understand the gravity, but they were understanding. You know, this object wasn't deemed evil or demonic, even after it ripped Jesus and threw him. It was studied. And even as it continued to act up, it was like, all right, we need to study this thing. And when it really acted up, sure, it went up for a little while, but not forever, because the crone likes to make a statement, which is the scene that you get at the Michigan Paracon event that I didn't talk about. You have to just watch it. But I feel like it's another nudge to me, though, of the crone kind of guiding them towards what she wanted, which is what you get to see on top of a mountain in the Catskills. And I want to end this on just one more line from Dana, because she speaks towards this type of entity that maybe the crone is adjacent to, maybe. And it's a clue to those who haven't seen it about maybe what on earth would have been in this statue. But I also just, I really like this this piece here. Sometimes I think about the goddesses and the gods that have been lost, and I think about how they are still here and still alive. And I feel like the gods and goddesses are coming back to us to remind us of who we are. And that history is, it's not history. It's like an organism. It's like a living, breathing thing. It's finding its way back into the collective consciousness, and it's allowing people to reconnect with who they used to be. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. And that it is a living thing, and it will continue to be a living thing. So, y'all, watch The Unbinding. You'll get a good spook out of it, for one. You get good spook, and you'll probably get a cry out of it, because, again, if my dusty-ass lizard eyes were able to eke a few tears out, y'all will be able to. Like, I know it. But I get, this is a movie where the paranormal is shown. And just, I keep coming back to just compassion is a word that I just feel describes it so well. And it's in a way that many people in the occult community, I think, will recognize and relate to, especially as paranormal TV just keeps spiraling so much worse into demons and hellfire and brimstone. It's just, it's special that there is a team like Planet Weird putting work out for the study of the paranormal, and they're uniting camps that will do so much more good working together on things, looking at the phenomenon as a whole with an open mind. You know, and you see things, you see witches and ghost hunters and UFO ufologists, that's the term, my brain snapped, cryptozoologists. you see it all. It's, we will accomplish so much more if we all work together, and if we can see the phenomenon as the whole tapestry, or at least try to. And time and time again, through following their work, it does seem like the phenomenon is broad as well as personal. It's not defined by clean-cut lines and categories. It's the open-minded kind of thinking that they exude that allows for new discoveries. And if you're going to look at the world of the paranormal again, it just makes sense to take it all in. Why are you going to pick and choose what is possible and not possible when you're looking at the paranormal. Take it in with healthy skepticism. That's the best of both worlds. I just feel like it's, you get it both, accept it all, but be a little skeptical and use your own judgment, but don't balk at things. And not only will we learn so much more about the phenomenon all around us, but I think we will develop more just as an open-minded species if we do just look at the world around us with more open eyes like this. And anyway, that's pretty much it. Give it a watch. Watch Hellier. Give Haunted Objects podcast a listen too. It's on Spotify. It's really good. You learn a lot of things on that show that will also change you and your views of the paranormal over a lot of lighthearted, really well-produced episodes. And really, like, I know that they'll never hear this, but I just like want to thank them for what they do. Like, they do really, really good work out there. And they do good, like really amazing contributions to the world of paranormal research. And it has been fun to follow them over the past 5 or so years, just kind of seeing them change the game. Because they've inspired a lot of people, including me, like truly, to examine the fear that comes from misunderstanding and see how to move through that with more compassion towards paranormal things, things that we don't understand. But anyway, that's all I've got. And I would love to get a discussion thread going in the coven of those of you that have seen it. It's going to have spoilers in it. So know that, because that's the whole point of a discussion thread. But if you've seen it, hop on over there. And if you haven't, watch it and then hop on over there. But I want to talk about it like a lot.
You know, I was sitting here thinking when you were talking about the way this thing behaves, and I was like, you know, if I was trapped inside of something, some objects, I too would probably be throwing a foam of the mouth fit, trying to get some kind of attention.
Trying to get attention. Yeah. Manifesting as wildly as I could. There's a bit more clarity as
something's wrong with me.
You get a bit more clarity of the wit, as they look more into this item. But yeah, that's go watch it. It was really hard. I was like trying to tell the story without telling the story because I don't want to ruin it. I was spellbound for a solid like hour and 40 minutes. Like Hunter and me didn't say like, well, I mean, I said I would give my audible little gasps and awes and sad sounds, but like I was frozen in place watching it.
Audible little gasps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was a good one. Wow. And I get to fucking see them on Friday. And I can't wait. I'm going to go see their physical flesh bodies on Friday. And they're going to talk at my face.
Is there any kind of a meet and greet type thing you're doing?
I got VIP tickets, bro. So I don't exactly. Dude, I would love to say that I like read the description and studied it, but I like seriously saw them become available and I bought them and was just like, I don't care what it is. So
yes,
it's an adventure that Hunter and me are both going on, and I'm excited and I'm happy that they've helped Hunter too. They've helped change Hunter's perspective a lot. He still doesn't trust a ghost because you can't punch a ghost, but he's at least a little less wary.
You can't fist fight a ghost.
You can't.
We need t-shirts like that. But when there's this ritual aspect going on, was there any smoke cleansing, perhaps some incense use?
Yes, there was so much.
Wow, what a great way to move into my topic. I was gonna say after this week's
sponsor.
I thought you were going to do sponsor, McSponsor.
Oh, there's so many. That is a good one. You know, real quick before we get into the ad, do you know what a jingle is that just completely blows my mind? And it's just like, really? Like, that's the jingle? Is the one for car toys. The one for car toys cracks me up because it's just kind of the lazy vocal going, car toys, a better way to go! Yeah.
To go!
Every time I hear it, I'm like, what was that? What the hell was that?
What was that?
Anyway.
Macy, do you know what I love?
What do you love?
I love it when my favorite places, my favorite websites, my favorite clothing, my favorite jewelry, perhaps beautiful small pieces for your everyday witch.
Oh, yes.
I love it when they update regularly and have that hot, fresh newness spouting into my life. And you know what I also like? I love embracing the ancient wisdom of Norse witchcraft. I stole that from the blessedbemagic.com website.
Hey, it's okay. I am a big fan. Y'all know I love me the runes. And I'm excited to see this collection starting to roll on out here. Because, like, always new stuff coming out of Blessed Be. Like, seriously, I feel like you could check their site like every week and you're going to see new stuff out, which is just delicious. I love it. I love it so much. But
I mean, honestly, you guys know that we talk to you about every other week about Blessed Be Magic Jewelry. And every time we do, we're highlighting something new.
Yeah.
And we're never like wanting for new pieces.
Yeah. There's always new stuff. And when you're talking talismans, that's great because like they really run a pretty wide gamut on different witches and what you're into and what you resonate with and what you want to wear on your body. And it is nice to see some Norse witchcraft going on here.
Yeah. So part of the ancient Norse / you know, the Viking, I guess, collection, we've got the Helm of Awe, which is I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. I was going to try to pronounce the, like, the also known as English Jalmor. I don't know. Somebody correct me. But it's a symbol deeply rooted in ancient Viking beliefs. And it's to instill courage in the wearer, shield you from harm, serve as a potent reminder of your resilience and to ward off negative energy and things like that. And I love having something that I can put on my body that basically gives me the Bella shield.
Oh, we all need the Bella shield, bro.
Yeah.
And in this similar vein, we have another lovely little talisman, a little mini pendant necklace for Freya. And we have the Feo rune in it. We get one. We get different shades here. Maybe you're a silver witch. Maybe you're a rose gold witch. Maybe you're a gold witch. You can be whatever witch you want to be. But you have this.
You want to be a rose gold witch. That's what I like about Blessed Be.
Oh, very nice. Nice jingle that you made up on the fly.
Oh, yeah.
And so this little talisman is associated with the Norse goddess Freya because it has her associated rune, Fehu. And I love a rune pendant.
And I gotta say, this Freya one looks particularly classy in the rose gold. I'm just scrolling through the pictures. And I don't know, for some reason, certain vibes lend themselves to like, in my mind, look better in different color. And I'm just, I don't know, chef kiss in rose gold. That's all I'm going to say.
And Freya in Norse mythology, and this is from their website, is a prominent goddess associated with love, fertility, beauty, and magic. Freya embodies feminine strength and mystique, making her a powerful symbol for modern witches who seek to embrace their inner power and wisdom.
Oh. Wow. Maybe that's why it looks extra good in rose gold.
It looks really good. I like a rose gold. I have many colors of Blessed Be pieces. I change it with everyone.
Oh, with everyone, every day.
Every day. Every single day. Yeah. No, but it depends on the symbol. I'll be like, I like that better in silver. Or another one will be like, I want that in gold. And it just depends.
Yeah. And it also, you know, can serve your needs better, what you would like it for. I protect. I like something like the previous one we spoke about, the protection, to be in silver, to kind of give that mirror vibe, because I like using mirrors for protection and blah, blah, blah. But you just said every day, bro, which reminds me. I've had this necklace on every day, bro, as well as the stud in my ear I've had the stud in my ear over a year now. So if you're sensitive skinned like me and Macy are, It's a nice shout. They are very high quality. I don't feel like I'm poisoning my body when I don't rash up.
My ears don't swell up and weep as they love doing. Listen, they love swelling up and weeping from me wearing earrings of any kind. And there's not been many days over the past like year and a half now that I have not had a pair of these mini studs in my head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Got them in right now.
If you got it, me too, man. I got my little finger on it right now. If you find it hard to find subtle witchy jewelry that you feel comfortable wearing out in your day-to-day life, give Blessed Be Magic a shot. That is Blessed Be Magic. That is magic spelt with a K at the end, .com. And Macy, you got a surprise for them.
Yeah, bros. If you want a fat 15%. Discount. You can use the code all one word, all caps, witch bitch, and type that into the bar. 15. Get that 15% off. And one more time, that is Blessed Be Magic with a K. So blessedbemagic.com. Get you something nice.
I'm going to talk to you about smoking.
Okay.
You ready to smoke up, kids?
Okay, smoke them if you got them.
Let's get smoked. And other such things about smoke. Listen here. I wanted to talk about incense. I want to talk not necessarily smoke, cleansing with smoke. I just want to talk about the item that is the incense. And as I said, listen, it's my catchphrase for the, it's not just fragrant smoke.
Okay.
It's intention itself.
Okay.
Which is dumb, but it does allow you, like making your own incense allows you to infuse your rituals and your spellcraft and anything else. And even if you just like a smelly, burny thing, it allows you to put in the essence of your intention and then put it, you know, onto everything else that you own, like a thick, sticky smoke cloak.
Mm.
It's a powerful tool.
Smoke cloak.
And you can use incense. Smoke cloak.
Smoke cloak.
Smoke cloak.
Smoke cloak. Cloak. I like that.
Whether you are seeking love, protection, healing, abundance, basically anything you're doing a spell for, you make goddamn incense. And that's what we're gonna do. Listen, there's different types of incenses, though. And we've already spoken a little bit about them, but the first one I'm starting off with, I feel is the easiest or one of the easiest, and that is the loose incense.
Wow. Yeah. Because that's broad. Because is it loose resin, loose herbs, loose powder?
It's just loose.
Loose.
It's everything at the bottom of your purse that you shake out under the table.
Yeah.
And then you just sort of set on fire.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they still do this. I don't know if this is too old school a thing, but back in my day when I smoked cigarettes, if you had one like pop out of the pack and like just be rolling around your purse, we called that a Lucy.
A Lucy.
Might mean something different now.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a Lucy.
I wonder what the kids call it nowadays.
And it's like if you were out of, I have no idea.
I guess the kids call it a jewel, and they smoke that instead.
Yeah. I guess the kids call it an elf bar. but if you were desperate, you'd be like, maybe I got a Lucy, you know, you'd find some like gross cigarette covered in all the sticky shit that winds up in your purse. And you'd be like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. You got lucky.
Yeah. Oh, you could flip a lucky in your pack.
Oh, also. Wow. There you go.
Remember that?
No.
Anyway. loose incense. So it is essentially a blend of, listen, whatever you want, dried herbs. Sure. Resins. Go for it. Various botanical ingredients. Listen, I've like tossed a couple of drops of essential oil into my loose incense.
I always do.
Giving it a shake.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah.
If it's safe, you know, provided it's safe to like smoke up. Yeah. But these are super highly customizable because it can be anything. You can even use other types of incense in your loose incense, which takes me to our next type of incense, the powdered incense. I love the consistency of a powdered incense.
I like watching them burn on a disc when you put a good mound of them on there and you just watch it like slowly burn to the center and you're like, oh, yeah, look at you go.
sometimes I'll do something as I'll just do like a teaspoon, tablespoon, I don't know, a handful of cinnamon on a disc. Yeah. And that's, I'm like, that's powdered incense, basically.
Yeah, sure. But it smells good.
It's sort of like your loose incense. It's like the cousin of the loose incense, but the shit is ground more fine. Whereas your loose incense could have some chunkier things, like big chunky resins or wood chips or big fat herbs, this powdered incense is not going to have that unless you spend your time grinding it down. Mm. And it is pretty. You know, if you have you seen those incense burning videos where it's like a very intricate, like you lay the powder on a form, and then you lift the form up and it's this like really pretty intricate like maze design or like a symbol or something.
Oh, that sounds pretty.
So it's nicer to use if you are trying to perform a very like pleasing ritual, because if you are someone, as I am, who thinks that part of the ritual, part of the offering is it's a gift and we want our gifts to look nice, right? So it's just a little bit nicer looking, and is probably easier to, you can kind of make it by maybe throwing all your shit into like a food processor and just grind, grinding it up.
Yeah. I always want one of those. I see some people make, like, you know, you see little videos of like the incense pressers, you know, so it's like the little mold and you can stuff it and then form them all. And then it spits out good little solid cones. And I could get into that. Like I could do that.
That takes us directly to our next type of incense.
Nice.
Beautiful segue. The cone incense. And this is a very convenient and popular form of incense. And next to the loose incense, this is my favorite type of incense. This is made by binding your powdered incense, or it doesn't have to necessarily be as fine as a powdered incense, but somewhere in between a powdered incense and a loose incense. It could be kind of granular, but essentially you form it into a cone.
Yeah.
And you can do so using perhaps water sometimes or certain oils. You know, there's different ways to do it. But this provides it's easy to use, and it provides you with a consistent, longer burn. Now, this is where there's the difference between the loose and the cone incense. I like the loose incense because, you know, you get to throw it on the disc, you know. The problem with that, though, is if I'm wanting smoke for a longer time, say I'm going to do a ritual and I don't want to interrupt myself.
Yes.
By throwing more stuff on, refreshing that smoke, because it burns up pretty quick when it's a loose incense. But a cone gives you that, like you said, that fat, thick, oily smoke for a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. Next up is perhaps my least used type of incense. However, it was the first, and many people first types of incense, is the stick incense.
I use stick incense all the time.
I mean, I do use them, but it's because I have access to a lot of them, or I have bought so much in the past.
Yeah, I have so many.
Whatever. I just happen to have them. I don't go necessarily out of my way to get them unless they are that nice, like that chunky stick, kind of like that crust.
Yeah, when they like crust resins and shit onto them.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. However, I typically burn those just for a nice smell or like a general freshening, lightening of the whole place. But I don't use them in rituals so much. I find them to be a little less targeted. And
usually if I use them in magic, I use like six of them.
I'm either going to be using a lot.
Yeah.
But I also feel a little disconnected from them because I don't make stick incense. I can make all the other incense. The loose incense, I made it.
Yeah, so those are usually my go-to in magic.
Right. However, if you do wish to make them, it's pretty simple. I mean, I always thought it would be a little harder, but it's just rolling an incense paste mm-hmm. onto some type of burnable stick. And I saw usually it is like a bamboo stick. But they're very ideal for a slow and steady release of fragrance, much like the cone. However, they're going to give you probably a little less smoke than a cone will give you, especially towards the end of a cone where it's just the fat base. Mm. They're easy to transport. They're easy to get and get in a large quantity. So yeah, stick incense. Next up, we have resin incense.
Oh, resin, God, baby.
God damn it, do I love resin incense. So resin is, as we have learned, tree scabs from things like, you know, we're talking frankincense.
Also myrrh, called tears.
Copal. Sure.
Yep.
I like scabs. Mm. Makes me feel better. Picking that scab off that tree. Ooh.
Yep.
Feels good.
Scab.
Makes me feel like I scratched an itch. However, resin incense are very common to use and have been common to use through religious and spiritual ceremonies. And you will typically burn them by placing them upon that delicious charcoal disc.
Yeah.
That, like, I know I should be using the organic version of, but I don't, because I kind of like the smell like of the one that's been drenched in chemicals. Too.
It's kind of sweet smelling. I kind of like it. And
it gives me a vibe.
I just struggle to get the organic ones lit because they just really take a long time.
They take such a long time.
Like, even with a torch, and I'm just like, God damn, dude. Like, I'm going to have to light you over a fire.
Yeah. If you are perhaps over a fire, I've even put them on the stove for a little long, for like a long period of time. Don't recommend it. You might burn your shit down. But and then lastly, we have herb bundles. So these are bundles of herb that have been dried, you know, cedar, lavender, stuff like that for cleansing rituals. And I want to get into the historical significance of that. But we're going to start off with the ancient origins. So, the use of incense within witchcraft and or just religious or, what's the word I'm looking for? I just said it. Spiritual. Jesus Christ, Charlie. That has been used. It's got roots down to really early in our civilization as humans. And it has spread across basically all cultures and all times. It's just adapted in different ways, been used for different things, different types used, different herbs used, blah, blah, blah. So I want to take you, if you will, close your eyes. Mm-hmm. Shut up and close your eyes right now. Not if you're driving. Especially if you're driving. Fuck it. I want to take you to Egypt.
Okay.
All right. So, picture, you're there. It's Egypt.
Okay.
Okay. It looks real cool outside. You got the Nile.
You're really painting this world for me. I'm really getting somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. You got pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
You got people putting makeup on in like a really sick way. There you go. You should be in Egypt. I transported you. There you go.
All of it.
Ancient Egypt, incense held a profound significance. They believed that burning incense was a means to communicate with the divine. And it wasn't just, it wasn't just a fragrant smoke. It was a conduit between our realm and the spirit world.
Mm.
And the smoke from that incense was a messenger carrying offerings to the gods, and it symbolized devotion and reverence. But moreover, it played a pivotal role in the embalming process. I haven't heard that one in a while.
Cool.
But I feel like embalming used to be our exorcism. Before everything was for exorcism, I feel like everything we talked about was like used in embalming.
We did talk, especially with resins. There was a lot of resins in preserving bodies.
Shoving it up there, like under the skin of a chicken you're about to
roast. Yeah. Dry it out in there. Dry out them cavities.
It was used in the embalming process to preserve and purify the bodies and kind of help them on their journey to the afterlife. We're talking things typically from that time period in that place. Frankincense and myrrh were used and kind of available at that time, which led to their eventual like tie, hardcore chokehold tie that they have with like religious and afterlife, and it's frankincense and myrrh. It's in the fucking Bible, you know. Now listen, outside of Egypt. All right, outside of Egypt, close your eyes. We're going to Mesopotamia.
Yeah,
I won't put it through you again. Just picture Mesopotamia, and then you're there. Look, we did it. So. Cradle of civilization.
I was fixing to say, wouldn't this be before Egypt?
Perhaps.
Okay.
I didn't really go on a timeline. I don't know.
Maybe. All right.
but here is another place that incense was, I just kind of chunked old in its own category.
Great. Okay. Good.
So here, incense was also prized and embraced, honestly, for its mystical properties. It was a powerful tool for religious ceremonies and even ancient magic practices. The cultures believed that incense could communicate with deities, much like we're seeing in Egypt, to serve as a bridge between the human realm and the divine. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I was going to say, you and I have talked about that before, about smoke being a deliverer of messages, you know, and I remember we were talking about that just sort of through conclusions that you and I kind of just naturally stumble upon. And I think a lot of people did because it's just so natural and ingrained for us, our brains, to think this way. But yeah, you know, when you write something out on a bay leaf and you burn it up, that's how you and I have talked about, like, oh, I imagine the smoke is carrying it to the other side. So essentially the same thing here with these, you know. And I think it's just because our brains are not that different from old people.
Yeah.
Not like old people.
You know? Well, and I think that I think it just makes sense to our brains. Like it clicked with me. If I burn my message and send it up in smoke, smoke is like ether, you know, maybe it'll cross that veil and just ooze into their ears.
1 foot in each door, yeah. I think, you know, and it's the middleman. But in Mesopotamia, we used all these things for incantations. We did protective rites, and we even used smoke to help unlock hidden knowledge, which I think is cool. To kind of be like a tendril that they wanted to send out. To the ether, to the things we don't quite understand, like death and the other side and ghosts and all these things we just don't know about, and space, like, you know, what is space back before you had telescopes or whatever, right? Like, so all these things they didn't quite understand, but they wanted to understand. They were just like, let the smoke go get it. I think that's good as shit. All right, so now we're going to talk a little bit about ancient India, where incense was deeply woven into the fabric of, again, spiritual and religious practices. And it was also, incense was used as an essential element of, Vedic rituals.
Yeah, Vedic.
Is that correct?
Like getting into like India, like kind of like yogic kind of texts. You mean like the Vedas?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't know if it was always like Ayurvedic or Vedic.
Yeah, no, those are, they call the Vedic period.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And that was a long time ago, right?
Yes. Okay. I can't tell
I'm doing good.
Off the top of my head, I can't tell you exactly when, but yeah, we're talking a good hearty minute ago. Listen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But within these rituals, it symbolized the purity of the soul, and it was offered to deities as the beginning of these things. Of course, it still is today, basically all of these cultures, but I'm talking about like the beginning and what the little toddler years of incense, yeah. I guess. The smoke was it's a gesture of devotion and respect, and it wasn't just about the smell of it. Well, that was nice. It didn't really so much matter what the smell was, as long as the thing we were using to make the smoke carried our intentions that we were trying to use and elevating this spiritual experience. And I kind of relate that today to when someone might burn vetiver. What's the stinky foot one?
Myrrh.
Myrrh, but also makes you sleep. Valerian root.
Yeah.
You may not. Is it valerian root or?
Valerian root's the stinky one that makes you sleep.
Yeah, right.
But I love it.
Okay.
I love it.
You might burn it if you like it, you know, if you like that earthy smell. But like sometimes being someone who hates myrrh, I will still use it for its purpose. So, you know, we're not always talking about delicious, delicious scents. We're going to move on. We're going to move on to China at this point. Ancient China. And this is, I think, perhaps the longest part that I have, because so much of our incense history comes from ancient China. And it is, when doing research into incense, ancient China stands as a testament to not only the spirituality of creating these blends, but the artistry behind it. Because the role of incense in Chinese culture was so much more than fragrance. It was deeply, deeply interwoven with not only spiritual acts, but things like medicine and philosophy.
There you go.
Macy. Do words ever just not word?
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. Bro.
So pretend I said that right. Medicine and the pursuit of balance and harmony. It was important and still is to Taoist and Buddhist rituals, finding its place within both of these traditions, and you would incorporate it to help attain inner balance, especially within focusing on the Tao. But for Buddhists, incense was and still is essential component for meditative and ritual practices. So this is also where we're beginning, and I believe I skipped over it, but also in ancient India as well, is where we're beginning to see a tie to incense and the meditation aspect and ritual practices outside of just talking to ghosts, but seeing how it can be used in our tangible world around us. So ancient China, they didn't just throw some stuff on a fire and call it incense. It was crafted with precision, and it was a beautiful, beautiful art. The Chinese developed an intricate system of having whole ceremonies being surrounding creating incense. So various aromatic materials, we've got herbs, resins, woods, spices, even things that they saw as medicine at the time, like solely medicine, were added and blended skillfully to create what I saw online someone referred to as a symphony that aligned to the energetic flow that they were trying to reach. And I thought that was really cool.
That's nice.
During the Ming Dynasty, the refinement of incense reached it's like a peak. Incense games became popular, which I would like to look more into that. But apparently, they, as a short answer, formalized ceremonies where the participants would appreciate the nuances of an incense blend. So I'm guessing it's like, burn an incense and then you would have to smell it and guess what was in it, or people kind of began making it an art form to smell it and be like, that has notes of XYZ.
And ooh, you're one, like two, an three. Incense sommelier.
Yes. Yeah. And these rituals within themselves, these games, they became more elaborate, and the arrangement of the incense materials started to get bigger and wider, and more things were added. And as other things were being discovered around the world, they were like, how could we use this in incense? How could we use this in medicine? And the appreciation of incense became very meditative. I'm not saying using incense in meditation, because that was already sort of a thing. I'm talking about the appreciation of incense itself became a meditative practice, which I think is really cool. So just appreciating the incense, finding the notes of it, finding the artistry, being kind of like a reverence to it, it connected it deepened your connection, to the senses and to ultimately the divine. And it was often emphasized, the idea that incense was It was also emphasized that incense, the act of burning incense, invited celestial energies and divine influences into the human realm. So not only is it the bridge between the two worlds, but it was like, hey, come on over. Come into this space. And we're starting to see that, not only are we shooting messages over to the other side, but we're making a space for spirit to come in and then, whatever, talk with them or ask for help, or just give gratitude and gifts, whatever you're doing. We're like inviting you guys over now. Let's see. Do. Birder, boo, boo. And also a little bit of like sort of like an everyday thing that I just like a cute little slice of life thing that I saw is in ancient China, the use of incense was highly intertwined with cosmetology. So it was just sort of like it was just sort of like what you did. You would like pop an incense while you like got ready, you know, and put on your makeup, and there would be essences of incense, like perhaps within makeup or whatever makeup looked like, you know, at the time. And
so like cosmetics really, and like the beauty industry
cosmetics. Yeah. I'm not okay. like super up to like what, you know, what was being used at the time, but like whatever it was, it involved incense, and it was just so like, that's what it was. It was just point blank. Like, yeah, of course this is part of it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And I really like it. So yeah, now moving on, we've got ancient Greece and Rome, which basically incense is being used in religious ceremony, symbolizing devotion, all the stuff that we saw before. But the word incense derives from the Latin incendiare or incendre. I'm sorry, I don't speak Latin, but it means to burn. So that's where we get the name.
Moving up, burn for you.
Burn. That just made me think of the firefighter from Virgin River.
Shut up. Move on. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, whose idea was it to burn a backfire? Whatever.
It's a good call. Good call.
Medieval and Renaissance Europe. Incense continued to be used within the Christian church, particularly during mass. And there would be lavish incense boats adorned. Wait. I don't know what I wrote here. Oh, I do. Okay, so they would have lavish incense boats adorning European churches. So just basically they would have these big showy amounts of incense. We still see that today with like the, I don't know what it's called. What is it, Mace? The swingy thing?
What?
You know, the swingy thing, like within the Catholic Church, it's got the frankincense.
Oh, what is it called? The censer or the...
Yeah.
I can't remember what that thing... I think censer is what that's called.
And that's...
I want one.
Yeah. Lavish censers and incense boats adorned European churches. And I'm assuming an incense boat.
Boats? I like that. That's cute.
I'm imagining it's just like a big dish that... It has a fuck ton of incense in it. I'm really not.
Totally it's like a sushi boat.
Yes, but with incense, or it's a whole boat made of incense, and it does not sail very well.
Oh, but it's like one giant big cone, and you light the little tip, you light like the prow, and then it just burns
it just falls
for
the ocean.
Days. Yeah. Oh, that sounds good.
Let's see. So within Japanese ceremonies, Kodo emphasized the appreciation of incense as an art form. Let's see. And there was also incense associated with Confucianism, Taoism, Buddhism within Eastern religious practices, so it's starting to spread out across the world. And that moves us into modern witchcraft and spirituality, where we know that incense persists within the world of modern witchcraft. And even, of course, obviously, it's still there in religious ceremonies and stuff like that. But for us witches, it is about creating that sacred space. Man, I'm having such a hard time talking. Are we still in retrograde?
I think what's so. Happening? I think we are still, along with a handful of other things, a smattering
y'all
of other
know.
Things.
Or maybe in shadow period. I don't fucking know. But like, y'all know I'm a mushmouth anyway, but I'm having a particular issue with this today. And also, it symbolizes purification, offerings, divine connection, and spiritual elevation. Now, moving on. I want to talk about making incense. Okay. Have you ever made your own incense?
Yeah, bro. All the time.
Yeah. Did you make like a... Well, I mean, I'm sorry. Let me clarify because we did already talk about mm-hmm. that. Have you ever formed like your own incense? I know you said you made like a cone once or twice. Like, what did you find that process to be like?
I found it to be tedious, but I also don't think I really used the right ingredient. So I made incense out of, if we want to tap dance back through time to 2018, yes, when we did the live show back in Denton, when you lost your voice. And
our first live show.
Our first ever live show.
My whole voice.
And you made the little candles and the soaps, and I made the Astral Autumn incense.
Yes.
I made some cones out of it just for me, but there was a lot of mugwort in those incense, which made it really fluffy and it made it burn good, but it did not make it want to cone up very well. And I remember I made like three giant clumsy, because it was like I had to make them big in order to like get them to hold together. And they looked like the sorting hat from Harry Potter, like these big crooked monster incense. I was just like, I am not doing any more of these at all. But they did harden. They did work. I made more than three. I probably made about 12. But once I burned them all, I was done and just used the loose incense.
I have made incense a few times. I've made the cones. I believe I've only really made it once, technically, for myself out of cinnamon. But way back when, probably also that 2018 era when we were very small and we could afford to and had the ability to send Patreon gifts.
Yeah.
Back in the day. I remember making an incense back then. And I remember I got some of the, gum Arabic. Mm-hmm. And I was very nervous because I was like, I don't know if you can breathe this. So I did like a bunch of research and turns out, yeah, it's in everything. And totally fine. And I don't really remember what else I did, but I've never made a stick incense, and I would like to try it. But I know that there's all kinds of ways to infuse your intention into this. Now, obviously, not only by using your herbs and resins that you choose, but like in the drying process and the curing process, really let it take the time to soak up. You could work with the phases of the moon, stuff like that. Excuse me. And if you are to make your own incense, because I'm going to move into the part now where I talk about the recipe that I've got for you guys, or just in general, if you're looking to make, here's some stuff that you'll require. Herbs. Dried herbs, chosen for their magical properties and correspondences. Resins.
I love herbs and resins. That's it. That's herbs, resins, a little bit of oil and a mortar and pestle, and you can take on the world.
Yeah, you burn some shit down. Mm. Literally, but like, you know, also like metaphysically.
Mm, sure.
Two, resins, frankincense, myrrh, opal, you know, something like that. So these things can serve as your base, your junky base. You can use woods, cedar, or other type of woods that, you know, always make sure to like see if it's safe to breathe, to powder, or even use it in its chip form. You can use, again, those essential oils. Like May said, yank out that mortar and pestle. See, there's a T in it.
Yeah, mortar, pestle.
Throws me off every time. Mortar and P-E-S-T-L-E.
I don't know how to spell it. I can't spell anything. I have to write it down.
Even if I do write it down, even if it's correct, I look at it and go, is that right?
Dude, do you remember UIL? Like UIL events and shit like that in school?
Yes.
I got entered in, because there was always some that I like chose to do, but I got entered in for some reason. One of my teachers was like, you'd be good in the spelling bee. A fucking joke, dude. What a joke.
How was it?
Dude, I was eliminated so fast. And the word that eliminated me was weapon, which is a word to this day I still get wrong. And I'm like, God damn it. And it got me.
Your brain said, nah.
Yeah, it just refuses. And when I get it right, still to this day, 29 years old, I'm like, whoa, I got it right.
Oh. Yeah. Mine was Wednesday. Wednesday would always get me until I like learned tricks like Wednesday.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I will still, when I'm spelling Wednesday in my head, I'll be like, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Let's see. You might need a charcoal burner, a heat-resistant container, obviously. Charcoal disc. You get your measuring tools, your mixing utensils, and important here, please don't forget your storage containers. Find you some airtight jars or something to preserve your blends in, because left open, you can lose your potency. And I have done that so many times. I've left my incense blends just sort of out in the open. And then when I burn them, I notice they're not as potent. And it's like, because like all that delicious oil is evaporating.
Yeah, bro. Volatile.
Volatile oils. Now, I have a recipe for you, an incense blend for you. Listen to me, children. It's relaxation and stress relief, because that's, everybody needs that, all right? Now, please, first of all, I tried to pick really mild things and things that are going to be easy for people to find and get their hands off. But if you're like allergic to some of this, I'm sorry. Feel free to sub it out. But we're going to do, and we're not even using particular measurements here. We're using parts, because however much you want to make. Use 2 parts dried lavender, 1 part chamomile dried, 1 part rosemary dried, 1/2 part of crushed frankincense resin.
So 1/2 part, just half as much as the other two?
Yeah. So like, okay. If your part in this case is a tablespoon,
gotcha. Yeah.
You'd use 2 tablespoons lavender, 1 tablespoon chamomile, 1 rosemary, 1/2 tablespoon of frankincense, and use 1/2 part of copal and 1 few drops of lavender essential oil. And you're going to start first, gather your ingredients. It's the first thing you need to do. Mise en place or whatever. Get a clean, dry bowl. The dry is very important here, because nobody wants your wet incense.
Yeah, gross.
And get a grinder, something that you can use, again, the mortero and pestle. You can use your KitchenAid, like, you know those little blender sticks that look like jagoff things? You just kind of use that. Mm. Maybe you have an herb grinder. You know, clean it out or whatever after you use it. But, you know what I mean by herb grinder, right?
Wink.
Wink. Have you seen those giant ones, but it's for chicken?
Ew, no.
No, dude, no, it's sick. It's about as big as a dinner plate.
Okay.
And it's for like your cooked chicken breast, and it looks just like a grinder. You put your chicken breast on it, cooked, and you shut the lid and you grind it just like you would your herb. And then you have shredded chicken in like 5 seconds.
Okay. Okay, that's a little bit better. I don't know why. And in my brain, initially, you put the whole chicken in there. And I just was like, this sounds rough.
This is sus.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first thing you do, measure out your dried herbs in the parts that you want to do. I would recommend 1 teaspoon being your part. Because, you know, you may not want to make a whole ton.
So just kind of I always make a ton. Oh my
God. So much. Dump all of these ingredients into your mixing bowl. This is when you're going to plop in 2 drops, not enough to make it wet, but enough to bring out a scent. This is kind of like a 2-year taste sort of thing. Mm. Mix it with a spoon. I wouldn't suggest using your hands, because that's going to get all over it. But hey, if you're like doing this as a ritual, that's part of it, baby. And then as you mix, focus on your intention for the incense. For in this case, it is relaxation and stress relief. Put in all these calming thoughts, play calming music. Mm. And after everything's well blended, you can then just put it in your container for storage. Again, airtight is best. I like to keep mine in glass, because I just don't like plastic that much for keeping things in. It creeps me out a little bit.
Well, and especially like if you ever want to reuse it again, if you put incense in like a plastic container and you've got oils and shit in there, it's going to taste like perfume until it's forever.
It's like putting spaghetti sauce into a plastic container.
It's permanent.
Like it's going to seep in.
Yeah.
It's there forever. And you know what else is there forever once you trap it in? And it really soaks in, and it really seeps up into anything it touches, is that beautiful review footage.
Oh! Oh! Oh!
Did I get you?
Oh!
Did I get you?
Yeah, you did.
Did I do it so close to my topic that I got you?
You, whoa! You did.
Yeah.
Damn.
Today's review, it comes from La Kala Iska Jedehe. And okay. It, I don't know what that is, but it's essentially, I think somebody just kind of scrambled some words out when it asked for a username.
Okay. All right. I like it. Strong.
This is called long. 10 out of 10.
Ah!
Love the useful information. But even more importantly, I love the conversation between these two. The information I've learned from this podcast and the people I've met because of it will always be some of the best parts of my life. Thank you, LAKALAISKJDH.
Woo! Yeah.
Woo-woo!
Thank you. Cool.
Wow.
I like a good, long... I like a username that makes you work.
Yeah. Yeah. I like a cute username. And I like a username that makes you go, did I say that right? Or did I offend them? Because, like, what if that is their name? And I was like, it looks like someone smashed their keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well.
All right.
let's see. Again, guys, please check out that Simp Cap. Tomorrow is the last episode. The last episode of season three. And we're wrapping up Cushiel's
Dart by Jacqueline Carey. So if you're one of those people that likes to have the whole thing out, before you go and give it a listen on Thursday,
so
this
you can
binge and listen, it's a lot of time. It's going to at least be all in by the time we're done, about 30 hours long.
Yeah.
Each episode is at least 3 hours long, 3.5 on average. One is like 4:15. And it has been quite the labor of love. I'm excited to not be doing it. Because I miss having free time a lot. And every day.
But at the
day,
same time, that means.
I know.
We're moving into the season of Virgin River.
I'm going to be in a lot of pain because I barely survived the first half of the season.
And
at all.
What's great is we have up until this point, and I'm not counting the Wimp Cap where we talked about Bear Grylls, but up until this point, we have talked about things that we have truly enjoyed. Even with Farmer Wants a Wife, even though we shat on it and roasted it.
It
was fun. We still enjoyed it, and we still got more involved than we should have gotten. But this is going to be our first full season of true pain.
I hate this. I hate it.
And we beg of you to join along with us so we can talk about it. We can get too invested. And we can roast.
Come on.
As hard as we can.
You know you want to. Let your roast flag fly and let's just burn it all down.
This is time to do it.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Gross. It makes me nauseous. It makes me truly nauseous thinking about, like, not only are we gonna have to rewatch it all, but we've still not finished. I've thought since we left, I was like, I don't want to watch the second half. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna watch it until I have to.
They're being cock asses because we only get 10.
Yeah.
And then they're gonna release what, the final two?
Final
or so?
Two. Yeah.
In like November. So we have to basically.
We're gonna have to
hiatus.
Dredge this shit back up again and do a Wimp Cap over it.
Yeah.
Fucking bummer.
So that'll be fun. Please join us for that. What happens? Is there a fire involved? Yeah.
Whose idea was it to build a pack fire?
Was that guy?
Thank you for the text. Meant a lot.
He managed wildfires in prison.
I hate this. I've got to leave. Before I get sweaty and upset.
Yeah.
I've got to take Kush Cap notes so we can properly send off that story with the respect that it deserves. Thank you, Jacqueline Carey, for being the best author in the world. And then come wallow in the fucking pig slop with us all that is Virgin River starting next week.
I'm going to leave this room. I have a massive amount of laundry to do. I got to turn my back.
I got to get
goodbye, everybody.